old. Never mind. I could run an aerobics class for you instead of preaching if you like. Yes? No? No, we're not going to do that. Because I couldn't do it in these heels. Right. Okay. So, learn. It's a really familiar passage. I'm sure that you have heard hundreds of preachers on Peter getting out of the boat, especially any time somebody wants to preach on taking risks for Jesus, then this is the passage that we use, isn't it? But I wonder whether you've actually really thought, what it would have been like to actually be in that boat. To put yourself alongside the disciples. As they're in the boat, the storm began. You're worried because the storms are scary because most of you are fishermen and you know they're dangerous. You're desperately trying to get to the other side. There's no Jesus in the boat to stop the storm like he did last time. And then to top it all, there's a ghost approaching as you're terrified. And it's not a ghost. It's Jesus. Now, I'm not sure what my reaction at that point would be. But I don't think my first initial reaction would be, hey, Jesus, if that's you, tell me to come to you on the water. I think my actual reaction would probably be, Jesus, get in this boat and stop the storm. And I don't think I'd say please either. I don't know how many of you have been to Galilee. I went, it's not moving, it's not on, that's why. Try that one. So I went to Galilee. This is a picture that we took of a boat on the Sea of Galilee. It's sometimes called a lake, it's sometimes called a sea. And it's a pretty big lake. It's 30 miles long and it's 8 miles across, approximately. And it is really prone to these sudden storms flashing up out of nowhere, which makes it fairly scary. Now, we did get in a boat, and we did go across the Sea of Galilee. And I have to say that the thought did cross my mind to get out of the boat and see if I could walk on water. I have this strange kind of, it's a bit like when I'm in an aeroplane, I kind of want to get out, open the door and get out. And I had that same impulse, you know, could I, you know, Jesus, I know you're here and I know you're real and could I really walk on water? Of course, I dismissed it as completely daft, didn't get out because Galilee's really deep and I probably would have had to swim at least 4 miles to shore. So, but it's okay for Jesus, wasn't it? I mean, he was a miracle worker. He was God. But what was Peter thinking? How foolish was he to leave the relative safety of the boat? There was a storm going on. But, you know, had he completely lost his mind? What were the other disciples thinking? I mean, it's like, Peter, don't be serious. Peter, stop. Stay. That's stupid. You know? But Peter, now we know he was a little bit foolhardy from the other stories in the Bible. You know, he was always the one to jump feet first into anything and then think about the consequences later. But he knew Jesus. And he had spent so much time hanging around him that he knew him. And he knew that he could trust him. And he also knew that it was possible to do some of the things that Jesus did. Now, I'm not saying the other disciples didn't know this, but I think when it was combined with Peter's, you know, natural inclination to rush in where angels fear to dread and all that thing, that actually that's why he got out of the boat. He'd spent enough time hanging around Jesus to know that he was authentic, to know that he was the real deal, and to know that he had their best interests at heart. several times earlier in Matthew's Gospel, it's recorded that it says, Jesus was one who had authority, had been given authority by God. And Jesus had defended the disciples. You know, they came under the wrath of the Pharisees for picking and eating grain on the Sabbath. And Jesus defended them, and he spoke up for them. So they knew that Jesus had their back. And he'd seen Jesus heal people, open blind eyes, heal crippled limbs, cure leprosy. Peter's mother-in-law had been healed when Jesus came to stay. He'd calmed a storm before on Galilee. And just prior to this event, he'd multiplied 5 loaves and 2 fish to feed 5,000 men, plus the women and children. So they knew he had the power, power over the natural world. And they had, prior to this, performed miracles themselves. In chapter 10 of Matthew, he talks about Jesus sending out the 12 disciples. Now, it doesn't say in the Gospel of Matthew what happened. But that same story in Luke's Gospel records the disciples healing sick people as well as sharing the good news that they'd been sent out to do. So they had already got to do what Jesus did. So perhaps, Peter thought, well, if I can heal people like Jesus, then I can walk on water like him as well. And the truth is that he did. He got out of the boat and he walked on water like Jesus. It was only when he took his eyes off of Jesus. It's only when he started to focus on the stuff around him and not on Jesus that he started to sink. The essence of the fourth habit in this Bells series is to learn Jesus, to know Jesus so well that we can emulate him, that we can do what he did, that we can be Jesus to others without really thinking about it, without having to wear a "What Would Jesus Do" band on our wrists to remind ourselves. Anyone still got one of those? Nobody's admitted. Oh, there's one hand at the back. One person's brave enough to admit it. In his introduction to this fourth habit, Michael Frost points out that to learn Christ was really common. It was a really common expression in the early church. But it's an expression that we don't really talk about. We don't use the expression "learn Christ" or "learn Jesus" today. You know, but in the early church, there was a real danger of death and persecution for the early Christians. And they couldn't be public like we are. You know, the early Christians couldn't hold services like this today. People couldn't just rock up to church, respond to an altar call. Somebody would lead them in the sinner's prayer, give them a Bible, job done, sorted. Another tick in the box. Becoming a Christian wasn't like that. It was a much more intensive experience where potential converts were expected to deny everything about their pagan lifestyle and their pagan gods. And they were to enter an extensive period of study about the work and the person of Jesus. They could spend up to 2 years learning about him, learning how to be a disciple, proving that their commitment was real. And during that 2 years, they might only ever meet the person who'd introduced them to Jesus in the first place. They wouldn't know anyone else in the rest of the church. It was too dangerous. But once they'd proved themselves, once they'd learned Jesus, once they were walking like Jesus walked, doing what Jesus did, then they would be admitted to the church body. And often, that would be via their baptism service, which would normally happen on Easter Day. And you know, many countries of the world today, that process, in a sense, still happens because it is too dangerous to reveal yourself as a Christian. And whilst it's possibly not completely necessary and maybe a slight overkill in the West, I do sometimes wonder what the church here would be like if we made a lot more, if we put a lot more emphasis on learning Jesus. And Frost says that there are two primary reasons for learning Jesus. There's the devotional aspect of growing closer to Jesus to help our intimacy with God, to help with hearing the Holy Spirit when he prompts us. Think about last week's habit of listening. As we learn Jesus, as we become more intimate with him, it helps us to hear what the Holy Spirit is saying to us. And it helps to conform our lives more closely to his will for our lives. And then, there's the missional aspect of making our lives questionable. The more we know about Jesus, the more intimate we become with him, the more like him we are able to become. And this means that our lives will increasingly become more questionable, increasingly more different from the lives of the people around us that don't know him. If we don't know Jesus, his life and his ministry as it's reflected in the Gospels, how can we know how Jesus would respond to a situation and do likewise? If we don't know Jesus, how can we answer that question in our situations of what would Jesus do? Because today's society is not actually like Galilee's, so we need to know and be able to apply. If we don't know Jesus, we can't do what he did. Both Martin Luther and Dietrich Bonhoeffer stressed the importance of knowing Jesus if we want to access the power of the gospel to transform lives. And one of my favorite books, I have to say, is a book called Do What Jesus Did. Some of you may have read it. It's by an American pastor and missionary called Robbie Dawkins. And in it, he points out that somehow our religion, the way we do church today, has made it too easy for us to forget that Jesus was radically inclusive, that he was table turning, he was paradigm shifting. The Jesus of the Gospels was something far more unsafe and dangerous and scary than the safe and slightly boring church that most of us see today. So, when we behave like Jesus, when we start to behave like him, people notice. They ask questions. They want to know more. God invades their lives too. Jesus' last instruction to his disciples was to go and to make more disciples, to teach them everything that he had taught his disciples. If we are his disciples, his followers, then we need to go and we need to do the same. But we can only do this if we know what he has taught, and we can only do this if we study him and we get to know him. So, you're saying, great, how do I do this? Frost suggests that we start by allocating one period of time a week to learning Jesus. Not ditching any Bible study, quiet time, reflective time you have, but adding in a period a week to really concentrate, to really learn Jesus. He suggests we do this, reading, rereading, reading again the Gospels. Not a little bit like we've just done, but a book at a time. Depending on how fast you read, Mark will take you about 90 minutes, John will take you a little bit longer, and Matthew and Luke will take about 2.5 hours. So, not a massive chunk of time out of our week, really. Maybe ditch the soaps and read a gospel instead. Read other books written about Jesus. There are many. I have a few on the screen. One of them I think some of you have read already, King's Cross. Some of them, there are lots of scholarly books if you're into like really challenging your brain, but there are some less scholarly ones as well. I have some of those books on the list. I'm really happy to lend them. I think Sadhu has lots more books in his bookshelf. I'm sure if you asked him nicely. Or in your small groups, why not pick a book, read it, and discuss it together. Watch films about Jesus. I liked this idea. Even the fun ones are going to help you to understand a little bit. They may be one-sided. They may be a little bit sort of narrow in their view. But as you start, as you learn, as you have the Gospels and other books and films, and you start to build, each bit will help you to see a rounded picture, to know, really get to know who Jesus is. Each bit will help to impart a Jesus flavor to your life. Okay, that's enough, because it's cold. If you want to delve a little bit deeper into discipleship and anything that I've said, come back this evening, because we have our teaching stream, which I have entitled, If You Want to Walk on Water, You Have to Get Out of the Boat. So after another one of my favorite books, come back and we'll be looking a little bit deeper at how we do discipleship and what it really means. But for now, I'm going to play a track. I want to encourage you to reflect on what I've just said. Maybe just one thing that struck you, that jumped out from something I said. Or you may want to think about what it would mean for your life, or how you could actually set aside a period of time each week to listen, to learn Jesus. Or you could just use this time to listen to what the Holy Spirit might be saying to you about Jesus and about your discipleship walk.